The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards with another edition of the Armchair Traveler from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. And over the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the Washington Post and AAA Go magazine. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we're going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. And on today's Armchair Traveler, we're going to head to the U.S.-Canadian border, where we find the iconic Niagara Falls. I recall it was a cold day in February 1981 when I visited Niagara Falls. It was on the Canadian side near the town of St. Catherine. I vividly remember the Skylon Tower looming in the horizon with a large digital clock and a temperature display nearby. Now, it was late morning, and the temperature, according to the display, was minus 19 degrees. Yep, minus 19. So cold that Niagara Falls was literally frozen in a state of suspended animation. You could still hear the water running beneath the frozen surface. It was quite spectacular and definitely the coldest temperature I've ever experienced outdoors, to my knowledge. Anyway, Rebecca Retzel, writes about another aspect of Niagara Falls, as the headline reads in the November 23, 2018 issue of the Washington Post, "Near Niagara Falls, U.S. and Canadian forts from the War of 1812 still face off." So let's begin our journey today and find out more. Dan LaRoche holds a slight grudge against the United States. Every day when he goes to work as site supervisor at Fort George in southern Ontario, he can stare across the Niagara River into western New York and think to himself, "Those Americans stole our flag." Our flag would be the British banner that waved above Fort George in May 1813 when the garrison was captured by the Americans. After 3 days of intense fighting about 20 miles upstream from Niagara Falls, 6 months later, the Americans burned the town surrounding the fort and retreated back across the river into American territory, taking a tattered Union Jack with them. LaRoche would like it back. It's only fair, because after the Americans fled, British forces not only retook Fort George, they easily captured Fort Niagara on the U.S. side of the river. The American garrison's flag was transported to London and presented before King George III. And then, for nearly 200 years, the Scottish descendants of a War of 1812 generally proudly held on to the looted stars and stripes. Well, in 1994, the family matriarch, an aristocrat romance novelist named Lady Strange, sold it back to Fort Niagara to fund a new roof for her castle. Since 2005, the 12-by-27-foot star-spangled banner has been on display in Fort Niagara's visitor center. "When I heard they got it back, I thought, hey, that's our war prize," LaRoche said. He was joking, mostly, but the Fort George flag was reportedly last spotted at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, and if anyone in America sees it, please let Canada know. Capture the flag anecdotes aside, Fort George and Fort Niagara are significant historical sites because they represent one of a few locations where the two countries battled from sovereign shores and the only spot along the 525-mile U.S.-Canadian border where opposing forts still stand. You could say they are monuments to bygone days, an era when the United States and Canada weren't getting along. Or you could listen to the news to hear an update on fractious trade negotiations, or to hear Homeland Security officials warn Canadians who work in the cannabis industry not to cross the border, or to hear President Trump proclaim at a news conference, "Canada has treated us very badly." And then you might wonder, is the relationship between the United States and Canada the worst it has been since the War of 1812? Heaven knows that's true. Things haven't been this bad in a very, very long time, says Robert Bothwell, a professor of history at the University of Toronto who specializes in U.S.-Canadian relationships. He noted that a recent nonpartisan Angus Reid poll showed fewer than half of all Canadians have a favorable view of the United States after 2 years of volatile trade negotiations and insults. That's very different from the height of the Iraq War, when Canadians disapproved of President George W. Bush but still fought favorably of the United States as a country. Bothwell says he despises Trump, but he and his colleagues who studied the War of 1812 are enjoying a slight bump in attention thanks to the current war of rhetoric. Last summer, he called a friend, Pulitzer Prize-winning historian Alan Taylor, with some exciting news. "You just got quoted by the Canadian foreign minister in one of her trade speeches," Bothwell recalled saying to Taylor, who teaches at the University of Virginia. While it's unlikely that Fort George and Fort Niagara can attribute increased attendance to throwback political tensions, both sites report that the numbers are up. At Fort Niagara, which is operated by a nonprofit group and surrounded by a gorgeous state park, attendance has more than tripled from 70,419 a year in 2011 to 253,000 in 2017. "It helps pay the bills," says Robert Emerson, a military historian who serves as executive director of the Old Fort Niagara Association. Parks Canada, which operates Fort George, with help from a nonprofit group called the Friends of Fort George, declined to report specific figures but confirmed that visitors are on the rise. Both forts are open year-round and both charge a small admissions fee. They are the ideal place to get a crash course on U.S.-Canada relations that you won't get from watching the news. For starters, as soon as an American steps inside Fort George's stockade, you'll hear a very different narrative about the War of 1812 than what you hear in school. In June of 1812, the United States of America declares war on Great Britain. Canada is still a British colony and a heck of a lot closer, so this becomes a battlefield, explains ghost tour guide Heather Collicott on a blustery and moonlit October night. Collicott stamped her heavy-booted foot. Her lantern bobbed, and she swished her black cape with pride. Over the course of the war, a dozen U.S. armies crossed the border in an effort to turn us into another state of the Union. As we're standing on Canadian soil, you can decide for yourselves how they do. The concept of the war was an invasion of Canada, and it may be foreign to any American who grew up hearing stories of the British burning the White House and the banner yet waving over Fort McHenry. And yet at Fort George, excellent exhibits inside a reconstructed blockhouse make clear that's exactly what President James Madison intended. Both Madison and his predecessor, Thomas Jefferson, aptly portrayed in the musical Hamilton as a pair of conspiratorial drinking buddies, were convinced that English-speaking residents of what is now Ontario would want to join the Union. The acquisition of Canada as far as the neighborhood of Quebec will be a matter of mere marching, Jefferson boasted in August 1812. He was wrong. On October 13, 1812, Americans crossed the Niagara River and encountered British, Canadian, and First Nation forces at the Battle of Queenston Heights, just south of Fort Niagara and Fort George. It was the first significant engagement, and it was an American defeat. More than 500 American men were killed or wounded, and nearly 1,000 were taken prisoner, according to historian Carl Benn, who has written several books on the War of 1812. On the opposing side, however, 104 troops were killed or wounded, and among the men fighting for the British were about 250 First Nations people and a 50-man brigade of freed slaves and black servants. But British priorities eventually shifted south. Meanwhile, the U.S. Navy had built a fleet on the American side of Lake Ontario. In May 1813, American forces heavily bombarded Fort George from Fort Niagara and held Fort George for an uneasy 6 months. Then one December day, they went around knocking on doors and suggested that the Canadians should leave because they were about to burn the place down. It's likely no one believed him, Bothwell says. That just wasn't done back then. The next day, the American occupiers were back, torches in hand, and when the British forces followed them across the river a few weeks later, on December 19th, they returned the favor by burning Lewiston, New York, to the ground. Some historians say the torching of homes surrounding Fort George led to the eventual burning of Washington. In 1813, Lewiston was much bigger than Buffalo and considered a gateway to the West. Now it's a small hamlet full of touristy shops and microbreweries. Each December, some residents reenact the midnight torching by running down the street in pajamas. Bothwell describes such War of 1812 commemorations as rather quaint. Serious military exercises continued at the mouth of the Niagara River long after the 1814 Treaty of Ghent. On the Canadian side. Fort George was allowed to deteriorate because the garrison was so close to other active military installations, including Butler's Barracks, Fort Erie, and Fort Mississauga. Only the Gunpowder Magazine dates to 1796. Replicas of other buildings were built mostly on original foundations as part of an economic stimulus during the Great Depression. Fort Niagara has been well preserved, however, and was even expanded during the Civil War when the Union feared the Canadians might align with the Confederacy. They did not, and during World War I, both countries trained soldiers in models of European trenches, which visitors can still crawl through. During World War II, Fort Niagara served as a POW internment camp and dispatched German soldiers to work at Western New York farms. For years, some of them still called me each Christmas, said Emerson, who has led the historical site since 1997. The fort was busy even on a chilly fall Saturday. In addition to lowering and folding the American, French, and British flags that fly over the fort, a troop of Boy Scouts was tasked with chopping onions and preparing stew in the bakehouse, which began feeding soldiers in 1745. The medieval-looking main building, known as the French Castle, was built in 1729, and the land has served as some sort of military installation since the French claimed it in 1679. The English took over after the French and Indian War, and the fort officially became American property once John Jay's treaty took effect in 1796. We were built by King Louis XVI and decommissioned by JFK, Emerson says. That is a very, very long run. German tourists stopped Emerson to ask questions as we looked out at the Toronto skyline from the North Rideout Tower, which surely has one of the most stunning views on all of Lake Ontario. From the South Rideout, Emerson can just make out the Union Jack flag flying over the east side of Fort George. We used to be able to see more of the fort, but about 10 years ago they built that yellow condo building, he says, pointing to the largest of many buildings on the Canadian side of the river. The town of Niagara on the lake is busier than Youngstown and home to luxury hotels, quaint shopping, and a renowned theater festival named for George Bernard Shaw. And one of the magazine pages got stuck here. Excuse me. There we go. We continue. Before the United States adopted stricter border guidelines after 9/11, Emerson and his counterparts at Fort George held a tour de forts and rode visitors across the river in a touch of emulation. As in one report in American newspaper, officers from Fort Niagara were dining at Fort George in 1812 when they heard that the United States had declared war. They finished dinner, shook hands, and rode back across the river. These days, landing on the U.S. bank is forbidden, and waits are much longer than when crossing into the United States via the bridges. But the staffs will stay in touch. This fall, the two forts launched a social media war to see who would garner the most Facebook likes. Well, we won the Facebook war, but I feel kind of bad about it. It was their idea, Emerson said. There are good guys over there. He misses looking directly out at Fort George. He and his staff sometimes joke about firing cannons at the yellow condo building. LaRoche was amused by that prospect. He shows up for work most days wearing his formal captain's uniform, complete with woolen red coat and ostrich feather hat. We could help with that, he said of the condo bombardment. I've got some artillery. He was dressed and ready for battle, but no shots were fired. He was smiling. Well, writer Rebecca Ritzel lives in Washington, D.C., and you can follow her on Twitter if you like, at R.J. Ritzel, R-I-T-Z-E-L, at R.J. Ritzel. And if you'd like to visit these sites that we've been describing, here are some travel tips for you on places to stay. The Hilton Garden Inn, you'll find that at 500 York Road, Niagara on the Lake, Ontario. And you can check them out at Hilton.com, Hilton.com. Now, this chain location has a saltwater indoor pool and newly renovated rooms and about a 12-minute drive from Niagara on the Lake and across the road from a classy outlet mall and surrounded by wineries. Rooms are priced seasonally and usually start at about $100. Next, we have the Niagara Crossing Hotel and Spa. You'll find this at 100 Center Street in Lewiston, New York. And they have a website, Niagara Crossing Hotel and Spa, niagaracrossinghotelandspa.com. The name of this boutique inn references a river crossing favored by Harriet Tubman. Rooms are spacious. Many have fireplaces and start at $109 a night. Hop on the free Discover Niagara shuttle for rides down to the falls and up Old Fort Niagara. And the reference by Harriet Tubman, of course, is to the Underground Railroad, and that might be something you'd want to explore as well. As far as places to eat, we have the Brickyard Brewing Company at 436 Center Street in Lewiston, New York. BrickyardBrewingCompany.com is where you find more information. That's BrickyardBrewingCompany.com. A new building in this town, burned by the British in 1813, constructed in modern, rustic fashion with outstanding food bar offerings under $20 and seasonal beer starting at $5. If the restaurant is loud because there's a party upstairs, you can try dessert at DiCamillo Bakery, the Lewiston outpost of a Buffalo legend. And then we have, yes, Wayne Gretzky Estates, the same one that you may be familiar with from hockey days, Wayne Gretzky Estates. You'll find this at 1219 Niagara Stone Road, Niagara-on-the-Lake, Ontario. And online, check it out at GretzkyEstatesWines.com. Gretzky is spelled, by the way, G-R-E-T-Z-K-Y, GretzkyEstatesWines.com. You don't have to be a hockey fan to enjoy this establishment, which includes a winery and distillery. The patio restaurant is a great place to let kids run around, and in the winter you can wear your skates up to the bar. A giant fountain freezes into a regulation oval. You can take a tour and sample ice wine inside a freezer, then enjoy pub fare and craft cocktails made with maple-infused whiskey, starting at about $10. Nearby wineries, operated by the same conglomerate, Andrew Peller Limited, offer fancier sit-down dining. Now, as far as things to do, well, we have the Fort George National Historic Site, 51 Queens Parade, Niagara-on-the-Lake, Ontario. And if you're interested in more information, check it out at friendsoffortgeorge.ca. That's friendsoffortgeorge.ca, and Fort is spelled out in that particular address. Established by the English in 1796, Fort George was built to protect settlers and Aboriginal people, as well as loyalists and former slaves who fled Canada after the Revolution. Only one original building remains, but careful reconstructions are populated with knowledgeable reenactors. Open weekends, November through April, with ice rink when weather appropriate. Open daily with Sunday ghost tours, May through October, $5 to $9, and children under 5 are free. Then we have Old Fort Niagara, which is located at 102 Morrow Plaza, Youngstown, New York. And you can check it out online at oldfortniagara.org. Niagara spelled N-I-A-G-A-R-A, oldfortniagara.org. Established by the French as a strategic outpost in 1679, Old Niagara may be North America's oldest military installation in continual use. It's still home to a Coast Guard station. Open daily year-round with costume interpreters. The surrounding state park includes a Lake Ontario beach and water park open in warmer months. Admission cost $8 to $12, free for children under 5. Then we have what we call the Shaw Festival. Now, this is multiple theaters in Niagara-on-the-Lake, Ontario. And check it out at shawfest.com, shawfest.com. Two of North America's three largest theater festivals are in Ontario. The Shaw Festival has long been the province's leading interpreter of George Bernard Shaw, but has expanded in recent years to offer musicals, more new plays, and holiday programming. A Christmas Carol will run through December 23rd, and tickets are going to range from $25 to $65. Then there's Niagara Falls, viewable from both the American and Canadian sides of the Niagara River, with plenty of opportunities to get wet and get close via the Maid of Mist and Whirlpool jet boat tours. And if you want more information about all of this, there is something called iloveny.com, iloveny.com, or ontariotravel.net, ontariotravel.net. And I will say, a trip to Niagara Falls is worth it. I got to see it mostly from the Canadian side, because that's the one that you'll see most of in photographs. But the Buffalo side is also quite interesting, too, as you get to see the lake and how it feeds in, and a lot of different perspectives, if you will. Well, in the November-December 2019 issue of AAA Go magazine, we find that writer Chambers highlights some many holiday themes that surround Niagara Falls, so this may be something to consider in your travel planning. Let's take a look at what she offers. You can celebrate the holidays immersed in a wonderland of festive lights, tours, and activities at Niagara Falls, U.S./Canada. From mid-November to January, there's a plethora of festivities to help bring out the kid in everyone, and here's a list. We have that Skyline Tower we mentioned earlier for a spectacular view of the falls and surrounding area. All dressed up in festive winter decor, hop on a yellow bug elevator for a ride to the top of Skyline Tower. It's in Ontario. It's Niagara's tallest indoor entertainment complex with a 4D theater, food court, specialty shops, two dining rooms, and an indoor-outdoor observation deck. For a special treat, reserve a table for dinner in the revolving dining room at the very top, and be sure to check out the temperature gauge nearby. Annual Poinsettia Show, the Floral Showhouse Annual Poinsettia Show in Ontario, is a tradition that's been going on for more than 65 years. It features poinsettias, cyclamen, azaleas, Christmas cactus, narcissus, and other Christmas surprises. The Niagara Parks Floral Showhouse building is also decked out in lights during the festival. This runs from November 23rd to January 7th. And then we have Castle by Candlelight. The Castle by Candlelight tour takes place at Old Fort Niagara in Youngstown, New York, a French castle dating back to 1726. Experience traditional holiday decor, sip a cup of hot cocoa, and enjoy live Christmas music December 7th and 14th this coming year. Or I should say this year, 2019. Then we have the Jingle Falls and Gingerbread Wonderland, and the picture that goes with this is quite interesting. Boy, it's a huge gingerbread house. Discover lots of family-friendly activities during Jingle Falls USA on the U.S. side. Includes free carriage rides, candlelight strolls, music, food, and a visit with Santa and his reindeer. The dates are November 30th, December 7th, and 14th of this year. Don't miss Niagara Falls Culinary Institute's Gingerbread Wonderland. This sweet event features a life-size gingerbread village, a cookie decorating station, visits with Santa, and live entertainment on weekends, November 30th to December 22nd, 2019. And then we have finally the Winter Festival of Lights. And the Ontario Power of Generation Winter Festival of Lights transforms Niagara Falls, Ontario, into vibrant colors with over 5 million of sparkling lights and animated displays along a 5-mile route throughout Niagara parks and surrounding tourist areas. It's Canada's largest illumination festival and one of the largest in North America. And you can see those November 16th to January 12th of 2020. So there you go. Lots of activities going on around the iconic Niagara Falls. Well, recently, the winter 2019 issue of Guest Quest appeared in the News and Observer of Raleigh, and the insert focuses on places to travel in North Carolina and other southeast states. The cover caught my eye, Hanging Rock State Park in beautiful Stokes County, North Carolina. So we're going to start there and then check some other sites listed in the latest issue of Guest Quest. Here we go. The headline reads, 360-degree of autumn color and winter views, Hanging Rock State Park in beautiful Stokes County, North Carolina. Fall into a Stokes County state of mind as you bask in the beautiful leaf-peeping colors along the winding rural roads throughout the county and scenic trails of Hanging Rock State Park. By December, the colorful leaves fall to the ground and swiftly swept away in one of five rapidly flowing waterfalls or frozen in time in the frozen falls when the temperatures drop. A brisk winter hike is the perfect way to re-energize and boost the immune system. Experience panoramic views atop Moore's Knob as you embark on a natural fall color challenge of this 4.3-mile loop trail along the easternmost mountains in North Carolina. Enjoy breathtaking views from the lookout tower on top of Moore's Knob, reaching an elevation of 2,579 feet, the highest peak of Sarratown Mountains in Stokes County. Just a short drive from the Triad and a scenic 2-hour journey from the Triangle or Charlotte areas. Signage on the railing of the tower identify points of interest in all directions and provide history about the mountain range and state park. Looking for a relaxing stroll or an exciting, grueling hike with grand vistas or intimate, stunning waterfalls, forests thick in colorful leaves, or wide-open meadows Well, many proclaim Stokes County as North Carolina's best-kept secret of mesmerizing natural beauty, charming rural landscapes, and quaint downtown areas. Perfect for a day trip, but ideal for a weekend of adventure. Campsites fill up fast. Local vacation rentals and cabins provide visitors a taste of unique stylings and charm that Stokes County has to offer. Book a stay at a restored 1881 mill, log cabin, old farmhouse inn, or the lodge at Singletree. Now, each location offering a unique view of the mountains, enjoyed best sitting on the lawn as the setting sun highlights the rocky features. And for more information about all this at Stokes County, check out hangingrock.com. That's hangingrock.com. Well, the next offering in this guest quest edition is Morristown, Tennessee, and located between Cherokee and Douglas Lakes and a short drive from Great Smoky Mountains National Park. Morristown is an outdoor lover's paradise. Boating, fishing, mountain biking, hiking, camping, and disc golf are a few of the outdoor activities for you to enjoy. Panther Creek State Park on Cherokee Lake has something for everyone with hiking, mountain bike, and horse trails, camping, picnic pavilions, boat ramp, and a disc golf course. Beautiful Cherokee Lake is one of the premier bass fishing lakes in the region. Morristown boasts 5 championship disc golf courses and hosts the annual Tennessee State Disc Golf Championships. You can visit the many unique shops or restaurants, Farmers Market Pavilion, and Rose Center for the Arts in Morristown's historic district. For a quick getaway for outdoor adventure, fun on the water, or a stroll through a quaint downtown, you can make Morristown your next destination. And you can check it all out at Visit Morristown. Visit MorristownTN.com. Of course, TN standing for Tennessee. That's Visit MorristownTN.com. Or check out tourism at MorristownChamber.com. You can actually send them a note and get flyers and that sort of thing. Tourism at MorristownChamber.com. So there you go. Some really neat activities. Well, if you want to uncork, unwind, and unplug, head for Duplin County, North Carolina. Slow down, relax, and escape to the simple pleasures of life in Duplin County, North Carolina. Stroll through one of the historic towns and experience the history and culture that defines the area. Antiques, gifts, and local crafts are just a few of the hidden treasures you'll find in Duplin. Tour one of the historical museums, visit one of the famous wineries, and dine in a charming eatery. You can enjoy a relaxing stay in one of the cozy hotels or B&Bs. Duplin County offers a variety of accommodations, including from locally owned and franchise hotels, motels, and camping. And you can book one of the popular getaway packages and experience a degree of elegance and sophistication for a destination the size of Duplin. And they look forward to seeing you, they say. Check it all out through the Duplin County Tourism Bureau, and you can get them online at uncorkduplin.com. That's uncorkduplin.com. Now, we can't leave out neighboring South Carolina and its coast. A lot of things going on down there. We'll briefly run through this particular article. They say a mix of easy public access, private retreats, and natural preserves highlights the 200 miles of Atlantic Ocean coastline that South Carolina calls its own. For generations, beach trips to millions of Americans and Canadians has meant an easy drive to Myrtle Beach and later Hilton Head, while expanded air travel has added more international travelers in recent years. Reliable, decent weather year-round and a burgeoning menu of attractions and amenities continue to drive the growth in popularity. Starting from the north, Myrtle Beach anchors the 60-mile crescent of shoreline known as the Grand Strand. Characterized by long, sweeping stretches of sand and surf, the Strand offers both bustling and less boisterous choices for plopping that plastic chase lounge and propping the umbrella, among other things. Well, we've run out of time to enjoy the guest quest today. We'll have some more later for you. Hope you've enjoyed your journey on today's Armchair Traveler. I'm Mike Dippers, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, reminding you the content of our program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments and questions can be directed to 919-832-5138. Bye-bye.